Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Yasmin Khan. Rural libraries are not just about books anymore. They serve towns and pueblos in a multitude of ways, including healthcare, voter registration, internet access, and tutoring services. Rural libraries serve almost a half million New Mexicans, sometimes providing the only public space for community gatherings and educational services. Today, we're going to talk about rural libraries, the role they play in New Mexico's towns and pueblos, and the $50 million Rural Library Endowment Fund that's up for debate in this legislative session. And we would love to hear from you. How does your library affect your community? What would you like to see grow at your library if it had more state funding? And how do you see the role of rural libraries impacting the state as a whole? Call 277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org. I'd like to welcome Michelle Nymark, a local artist from Embuto, who has been working on crafting this bill and lobbying legislatures. Almost 25% of New Mexicans live in rural areas. 12 counties are mostly or completely rural. Why are rural libraries so important to their community, Michelle?
Well, in a lot of these communities, the rural library is the only thing that's going on in town. So in addition to giving books, many of these libraries have early childhood education programs, after-school tutoring programs, GED programming, community centers. They're really important for people to have a space to gather and meet and talk about community issues and problems. Libraries do social service work. They do just about anything a community needs. They're grassroots. Most of them are grassroots organizations developed by citizens in their town. And because they're on the ground, they can really address the kinds of issues that come up in their towns and villages.
And why should people in urban areas care about what's happening with libraries in rural towns and pueblos?
Well, I think that New Mexico has an identity with its rural areas, and that a lot of these areas are struggling, and the libraries help sustain these towns. I've seen what's happened in my own town of Dixon, and the library has totally transformed the town in the almost 30 years that it's been there. It's made it more vibrant. The town, there was always a connectivity between the people there, but this really brought people together. It really increased the education of the students because the library partners with the school. It's just made it a more vibrant place. It's become less of – it was becoming kind of a bedroom community almost because the store had closed. The local bar where people gathered had closed, and people weren't really able to connect with each other except maybe at churches or the post office when they saw each other. But the library really provided a place for people to connect.
And how much money do libraries get now from the state? And is it different between towns and pueblos?
Yes, it's very different. So the state library gives an annual grant of about $7,500 a year to each library throughout the state. It's called State Grants and Aid. There's 501c3 libraries. Both Christine and I are on 501c3 libraries. That is all the government money that we get. So there's about 15 of the 50 libraries in the bill are 501c3s, and we have to depend totally on fundraising and grants. The other libraries are in small towns like Magdalena or Glenwood, where there's – no, Glenwood's a 501c3, but Columbus, where there's very little commercial activity, and libraries depend on municipal gross receipts tax for their funding in small municipalities, and it's just not sufficient.
So you worked with Democratic Senator Jerry Ortiz-Pino from Albuquerque and Republican Representative Gail Armstrong from Magdalena on a bill to create a rural library endowment fund. It would be a one-time $50 million appropriation. How much would each library receive, and how would this endowment work?
Okay, so the proposal is based on the permanent fund that funds public education in the state. So the permanent fund, about 85% of it goes towards public education, and the other 15% goes to designated institutions like UNM, the Deaf School, Carrie Tingley Hospital, that was formed at statehood. So this endowment would be it would name the 50 libraries that would get a permanent disbursement from the earnings of the endowment. So if the endowment earns 5%, which is kind of average for what the permanent fund earns, then each library would get about $45,000 a year in disbursements. Of course, on a year where the fund didn't earn that much, it might be less. So 92% of the money would be dispersed to the libraries. 5% of the earnings would go to the state library to provide services for rural libraries, because they need, like, rural libraries don't have IT people usually, so they need help with that. Capacity building, a lot of these libraries need help establishing programs, need board trainings, things like that, and the librarians need training, because there's often not enough money for the librarians to get training. And then a really important part of the proposal is 3% of the fund would go to communities for grants to help establish libraries in towns that don't have them.
Mm-hmm. And can these funds be used for infrastructure improvements also?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we would love to hear from you. Do you provide services at a library or use library space to work with others? How do you see the role of libraries impacting the state as a whole? And how does your library affect your community? Call 505-277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org or tweet using the hashtag #letstalknm. We have Christine Matias in the studio today, library director for the Placitas Community Library, just east of Bernalillo. Christine, tell us about the folks who use your library. Why do they come in? Mm-hmm. How do you see your community benefiting from these library services?
Sure. So as Shel mentioned, our library is very much a community space. There's a reason why we have community in the name of the library. So, of course, people are coming in to check out books and other resources, but we also have tons of events going on pretty much every day of the week. This space is really used by everyone in the community, whether they're attending one of our events or they're using the space for HOA meetings or just another place to meet publicly. And as Shel mentioned, technology is also a big thing for our community in our town. Not everyone there has access to Wi-Fi, so it is a space where people can come and use the internet, use our computers. So it's really whatever the community needs. It's one of the few public spaces where people can come and use it.
So Wi-Fi sounds like it's a big deal for a lot of the rural communities.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit more about what that means, the ripple effects of having this public space to use internet, which we might take for granted here in the city of Albuquerque?
Sure. I think it's something that I even took for granted coming from San Diego. People don't realize that not everyone has access to high-speed internet. I mean, if you think about that, how that would impact your life in this day and age to not have reliable high-speed internet in terms of applying for jobs, in terms of, getting online education, those kinds of things. It's really important to provide that service to the people in our community.
And what would this endowment mean for the Placitas Library?
It would be huge, especially if we did receive the full $45,000 a year. Our library, as a 501c3, we depend so much on fundraising. About 90% of our budget has to come from fundraising for everything from keeping the lights on to paying insurance to paying my salary as the only employee there. So it's a challenge to keep going back to our small community to ask for funding every single year. And it puts a lot of pressure on our board and our volunteers to raise all that money every single year. So if we had that $45,000, it would really ensure ensure the sustainability of this library, ensure that it's going to be there for longer, also that it's going to have the staff support that it needs. Like Shel mentioned, the not having the tech support to run a library is really important, especially as libraries are becoming technology centers, and making sure that we can afford to keep serving that purpose in our community.
We also have Representative Gail Armstrong on the phone, a supporter of this bill. Representative Armstrong, why is this bill important to New Mexico, not only for rural communities where these libraries are located, but the state as a whole as well?
Oh, thank you. Good morning. Thanks for having me. You know, the biggest thing is rural libraries in general are becoming a thing of the past, and we need to remember where a lot of our kids, adults, our seniors have the ability to go to access information other than the internet. Mainly in rural libraries in New Mexico, we don't even have broadband in some of ours. And so a lot of people love to feel the pages of the books. We need to keep funding them and have an access for them to survive.
Mm-hmm. And so the state has a budget surplus, and there are a lot of different folks trying to direct those funds toward their communities or their projects. Where will the funds for this endowment come from?
Wow. You know, this is what the proposed is from the permanent fund, and it would be, I believe it's an amendment, a constitutional amendment that we'd have to do if we get the whole amount. I know that there's $5 million allocated right now, and everyone I'm on appropriations right now, and boy, it's been an eye-opener, the amount of people that are just coming out of the woodwork, of course, trying to get the money for their communities. But this would actually help several communities, not directed to just one community, and that's why I support it. I don't know that we can get it done. You know, we have the Yazzie Martinez lawsuit with public education, and that's, I believe, the majority of everyone's number one priority right now.
Uh-huh. And so there is a constitutional amendment that has to pass to create this endowment fund. That's another bill. Does that make getting this fund created more difficult?
Yes, it does. It does.
Okay. And some opponents also, like you mentioned, have suggested a smaller amount of money, about $5 million for rural libraries. Could that work?
That will help, but it's not going to keep the doors open for sure. I know a lot of libraries that depend on volunteers to open the doors every day, and God bless them for that. But it would be much better for New Mexico if we could actually create some jobs.
And what are some of the arguments for the ripple effects from rural communities out throughout the state for supporting these rural libraries?
Well, mostly, I believe I've got one in Glenwood and one in Magdalena for sure. The one in Dattle opted out, and that's, you know, frontier rural. But the Dattle one has an endowment that they survive on, thanks to a beautiful lady, Ann Sullivan, that has since deceased. But the ripple effect is that communities, a lot of people don't, they go home and they don't have access to a lot of different things. School, you know, rural New Mexico, school, a lot of them have four-day week schools because they live so far out. But a lot of kids stay in town in the frontier town, where they can hang out at the library and have activities. Our little libraries have all kinds of arts. They really tend to invite tons of artists from in the community and outside the community. So it's an extension of being able to grow in so many different aspects if they can attend those type of community functions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm Yasmin Khan, and we're talking about rural libraries in New Mexico, how they serve their communities around the state, and how they could benefit from the $50 million endowment making its way through the New Mexico legislature now. We'll be back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM, representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at rothsteinlaw.com. Support comes from the New Mexico Philharmonic. World-renowned pianist Olga Kern returns to Popejoy Hall, 6 p.m., Saturday the 23rd, playing the Rakh 3, Rachmaninoff's third piano concerto. Reserved seat tickets at nmphil.org.
This week in This American Life.
Just to show the guys that he could do whatever he wanted to do, when I was in the restroom, he slid newspapers on fire underneath the door.
The story of tyranny writ small, how one man grabbed power and came to be untouchable, terrorizing people, running the custodial and maintenance department of a small school district. That's this week.
Sundays at 4 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Yasmin Khan. We're talking about rural libraries and how 50 of these libraries in towns and pueblos around the state could benefit from a $50 million endowment that lawmakers are considering this year. And we have Representative Gail Armstrong on the phone. Gail, thank you so much for calling in. And I just wanted to ask one last question. What would happen if this bill did not pass? What would that mean for rural libraries around the state?
Well, they would just be suffering trying to keep the doors open, and it hurts the community. I'm hopeful that we can start somewhere. Of course, I will push for the $50 million, but the best thing that is happening is that it's being brought to everyone's attention, that this is an issue.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us, Representative Armstrong. We have a caller, Glennie from Taos. Hello, Glennie, you're on the air. Oh, Glennie from Taos actually sent in a comment. Glennie wants to know about smaller Native American communities that don't have libraries. Taos, Pueblo, Torreon, is there a method to establish new libraries and funding for them? So new libraries. Shell, could you take that question?
Yes, actually, Torreon, it has established a library just recently, and they are on the list. So if we get funded, the new Torreon Library will get funding for that. The part of the proposal that provides grants for small communities and pueblos to start libraries would be available grant. If it passes, grant guidelines will be written this year, and we will go out to small communities, and people will need to gather a group that would be later become perhaps the library board and come to the state library to ask for grant money to help them with their needs for establishing libraries. And we will also develop a roadmap on how to establish a new library in a town or pueblo.
All right. And so there right now are about 50 libraries on this extensive list that we looked at. Tell me about a few of them. For example, what libraries are provided at Vallecito's Community Center, and what about the Embudo Library that you helped found?
Well, the Vallecito's Library, it's an amazing organization. It's in this little tiny town. The library itself is in a 1850s era hardware store, and it needs so much work. I mean, from the roof, they don't have a bathroom. They don't have enough shelves. This library exists on about $3,000 a year. They're what's called a developing library, so they get half the state money, so about $3,500 a year, and all the rest is volunteers. So this library, when they opened, they put out a questionnaire to their community to find out what their main community needs were, and they found out that their community needs telephone service. People there can't afford to put money on their phones, so the library puts a phone on its porch, and it's there 24 hours a day. I was at the library for a couple hours a couple months ago. Steady stream of people coming to use the telephone on the porch. It's that basic. And when there was a forest fire near the community, the library became the command center for the Forest Service. And then subsequently there was a flood that took out their water system. So the library was the place that handed out water to people and taught them how to use a water filter. So there's a really great example about how libraries are addressing the most basic needs of their communities. Our Embuto Valley Library in Dixon, we are an award-winning library. I got to go to the White House a few years ago when we were given one of 5 awards to libraries nationwide. One of the other ones was the Los Angeles County Library System, so that was pretty exciting. We have programmings, our STEM programming, for example. We have a partnership with Steve Cox, who got a grant from the National Science Foundation to mentor students in STEM. So we have this wonderful robotics program and STEM programming. Our fourth grade class in Dixon Elementary, they have a wonderful teacher, but along with the library STEM program, they were able to be 95% proficient in math and science when the state average is somewhere around 20-something percent. So it's really had an impact on the community. Archaeology programs, the students, 25 students went out and found a 7-million-year-old perfectly formed camel jawbone fossil. We have a radio station. We sponsor a farmer's market. So the library is also involved in economic development in many ways, really.
And I want to highlight that pueblos also will benefit from this endowment. So what happens, for example, at the San Ildefonso Pueblo Library and the Okeawinge Community Library?
Well, the Okeawinge Community Library, they partner with their local Head Start program. There's 13 Head Start classes there, and 2 or 3 come every day to the library for story time. They would really benefit from the endowment because, for example, they would like to offer GED programming. Even though Okeawinge is near Espanola, people who live there have a hard time getting to Espanola for GED programming. You know, a lot of people don't realize that transportation is an issue for people who don't have a lot of resources. So they would like to develop a GED program right in their library. The San Ildefonso Library, it's a beautiful place. They have a wonderful library. They really need some more staff time. That's what they would use the endowment money for. They have many children's programs, after school programs. They teach the kids how to make tamales. That's what they were doing when I was there. They had a round table with local kids to talk about what they would do if their community was impacted by a climate change event, forest fire, flooding, and how they as a community would deal with it. So they are also just addressing really basic issues in their pueblo.
Mm-hmm. We have Scott from Embuto calling in. Scott, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good, thank you.
I was just going to talk a little bit about how I think our local, you know, and I'll probably reiterate some things that Shell has said because he's speaking about the library in the town that I'm close to, and the Dixon Library, and how that library impacts our town. From what I've seen, even the, say, kids get out of school, they go right across the street to the library. I have a friend, she had 4 kids. Has 4 kids. She lives elsewhere now, but has 4 kids that would go straight across the street to the library. And it's, to me, that's continuing the education. And it happens with a lot of kids in town. They get out of school at the elementary school. They go across to the library. They utilize the computer systems there. You guys were talking about needing money for tech, and that infrastructure is hard to keep up with financially, I understand. So the amount of people that I know that go in there to utilize the internet services and get online and utilize the computers, both children and adults, is very important. And it takes quite a bit of financial resources to keep that going. And as Shell was saying, you know, there's also the radio station that's there in the library. library and how it affects the community. It's like the heart and lung of our community, our small little town, and I'm sure libraries in other small rural towns are the same way. It's so important to be able to finance that, and you can't just completely depend on everyone putting out, you know, volunteer hours and you need to have other resources besides that. So as far as gaining a little bit of money from the state, that makes complete sense to me. That without that library in our town, it would not, our little town wouldn't be the same. You know, the culture of our town is expressed through the library. To be able to thumb through books, which is kind of a fleeting thing. To me, it's beautiful to have that resource and be able to offer that to people. And it makes a huge impact on our community, period.
Well, thank you, Scott. Yes, it sounds like rural libraries in these small towns where there isn't a lot of public space to gather, and there isn't a lot of space necessarily besides homes for people to get together and work on small business initiatives, to work on tutoring services, to work on any kind of local collaborative arts projects. So we would love to hear from listeners from around the state. How does your library affect your community? Do you provide services at a library or use library space to work with others? Call 505-277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org or tweet using the hashtag letstalknm. And we have on the phone now Maria Ellers, Library Director at the Columbus Public Library near the U.S.-Mexico border. And we also have Donna Hernandez, Library Director in Rio Abajo, south of Albuquerque in La Jolla, joining us today. Maria, tell us about your library and the needs of your patrons.
We're open more hours than anything else in town, so it is a space where people come to conduct business meetings with each other. They meet healthcare professionals one-on-one. They come in to access resources that they don't have access to because only 28% of our community has the internet at home. So they have to come in here to use our Wi-Fi on their mobile devices. They're often sitting around the building in their cars, finishing their homework in the early mornings. I see teenagers sitting on the porch with their cell phone trying to submit paperwork to their teachers while mom's waiting in the car to take them to school, you know. Folks come in here. We offer, the Friends group offers free coffee and hot chocolate and things like that. So they come in to warm up as soon as the doors open. They hang out, spend the day here, and make new friends. It's just an ongoing parade of people. And we have a lot of out-of-town visitors because this is a place where a lot of snowbirds come. So we have a lot of visitors from Canada or the northern states that are down here for the winter. And they're coming through and they're mingling with the community members. And they're getting to know folks from both sides of the border because we have folks that come across from Palomas on a daily basis or folks that are U.S. citizens that live there because it's, you know, less expensive. And so there is a lot of cultural mingling that goes on here.
And so how does Columbus's long-standing relationship with Palomas, Mexico, affect the needs of the library and what services it offers?
It increases our population base that we're working with. So on our census numbers, the village has 1,600 people, but we do have a lot of residents of Palomas that are using our facilities, including one gentleman whose wife is a teacher down there in Palomas. He will come check out a stack of children's books, and he'll ask to borrow them for a month so that she can use them in her classroom. And so we extend the due date on those, and then he brings that stack back and gets another one from him.
And
so
how
they don't have a good library down there to access.
Uh-huh. So library services in Columbus are helping on both sides of the border.
They are, yes.
And how would the Columbus Library benefit from this endowment?
Primarily by being able to help our staffing. I'm the only full-time person, and I have a part-time staffer who really struggles to get by with what we are able to pay her. And she's continually looking for ways to supplement her income just so she can afford to stay here at the library. And it's hard to see that. Our budget is just so tight that it doesn't allow me to give her any kind of a pay raise at this point or increase her hours even. So staffing would be the number one thing I'd like to do. And then the technology that others have mentioned. We do have highly used technology because people need access to it. And our computers are so old that the processors in them haven't been manufactured since 2009. They're really old processors. So we have 18 public computers that need to be replaced. And we're just, you know, continually limping along, keeping things running as best we can. But that extra little bit into the budget would really help.
And how do you fundraise now?
Well, this library was community built, and up until 2 years ago, it was actually community funded through a lot of bake sales, a lot of fundraising. I've got records showing how they had to have special emergency bake sales to cover the electric bill for that month. Finally, the village was able to take on incorporating the library as part of the village budget. But the village itself has so many needs that to give such a large portion to our library takes away from the other infrastructure the community needs. So anything that I can bring in separately, like the state help or the Go Bond money that gets voted on, really helps out with the overall community resources.
Mm-hmm. And we also have Donna Hernandez, library director in Rio Abajo. Donna, tell us about the unique needs in your community and what is the role of your library in your town?
Oh, boy. Well, we don't encompass just one town. When we were created, we rented a little casita in La Jolla. That was the only thing that was available. And we addressed the needs for the 14 farming and ranching villages throughout northern Socorro County, which is huge. We have everything from migrant children who are learning English to the average rural citizen. We even service the Mennonite community in a section of northern Socorro County. It's a huge area. The entire population, according to the census, is almost 6,000 people. So not being centered in one city with one city supporting, like many of the other libraries, we have zero municipal funds. When we started almost 20 years ago, our graduation rate for our kids vacillated between 13% and 17%. 20 years later, because of the interaction with the library and the community's involvement, we now enjoy a high school graduation rate of 98%. And over 70% of those kids go on to college and finish college. We're really proud of the accomplishments we've made. However, we do not have any municipal funds at all. Our entire budget for the year is the grant and aid money that the state provides for all the libraries across the state. Most libraries use that for little extras, for extra programming, maybe to help finance, you know, little extra things and so forth. For us, it's our entire operating budget. We do not have paid staff. We do not have new books coming in all the time. There are so many things that so many take for granted we don't have. It's fundraising. we like the bake sales, the bingos, the rattling the can. Oh, my God, we've got this bill coming up, and we don't have the money. One winter, we were only able to heat the facility 2 days out of every week. Even though we had no heat in the building, we stayed open. And people still came in. We're the only show in town, as the expression goes. Throughout northern Socorro County, which is huge, last year we got zero money from the county to assist us. Normally we get about $1,000 a year. Last year, because of budget cuts, we received zero. The possibility of having enough money to possibly pay somebody to be there instead of depending solely on volunteers sounds like a dream come true. We dream of one day being a big library and having our own building instead of renting a little casita. That itself poses problems because we're in a rented building or a rented house that we redid to use as a library. There are a lot of grant and foundation monies and government money that most libraries can access, which we do not have access to. You have to own your own building. We don't.
Yeah, thank you, Donna. I just wanted to read a comment, an email comment that came in from Mimi. She said she's working on a digital cultural heritage project to create archives of community-generated content. It's a collaboration with rural libraries in northern New Mexico. The Highlands University Department of Media, Arts, and Technology with a grant from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. She says this endowment would be a game changer for these libraries around the state. And we would love to hear from listeners around the state. Please let us know, how does your library affect your community? Do you provide services at a library? Are you a tutor? Do you use a library as business space? Let us know how the library serves you. Call us at 505-277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org or tweet using the hashtag Let's Talk New Mexico. And we have a caller, another caller from Dixon. Alice, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, first, I want to say I know we've had a lot of calls from this area because we do have such an amazing library. It's true. But I also want to say that I'm pretty recent to Dixon. I'm from northern New Mexico, and I've also lived in southwestern New Mexico. And the Glenwood Library, the El Rito, New Mexico Library, and this library are so dear to me. Many of them have helped me at times in my life, particularly like the Glenwood Library, where I didn't have telephone because at that time, like, no cell phones worked down there. I don't know if that's changed. And it was my only computer access. And for a lot of us here, like, it took me a while to get good computer access here because we have a lovely local company, but you have to pay a lot of money to get the satellite installed and get the Wi-Fi set up. And we just have such dedicated people at these libraries, and these resources are such gems in these teeny tiny communities. And I just want to thank all the people, and their dedication has been amazing. I mean, grant writing, and it's really, really, really incredible. I've been a volunteer at the libraries, but they've really saved my lives in terms of what they've offered to me. I also want to say they're a great equalizer. Dixon, like a lot of places in New Mexico, the income inequality is just brutal. Homes are selling here now for $500,000 to $700,000, even though this is in Rio Rebo County, which is a very poor county with a lot of challenges. And I see that all the people that are from here and all the people that have moved in here and the school kids and people who maybe are just learning how to access the internet, People from all walks of life cross paths in the library, and it's just a wonderful service. And it's so heartwarming to see all the children from the elementary school take advantage of all the programming there. And I just think that it is so important to support these as access for communication and education in areas that are very rural and underserved, and that even though people have moved in and maybe house prices are increasing, we still see homes with no access to the internet or telephone or transportation or whatever. So they're really just invaluable.
Oh, thank you, Ellis. Thanks for tuning in today for Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Yasmin Khan, and we're talking about rural libraries in New Mexico, how they serve their communities around the state, and how they could benefit from the $50 million endowment making its way through the New Mexico legislature now. We'll be back in a minute.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Katie Butler, author of The Art of Dying Well. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking not only about dying well, but living well.
Saturday mornings at 6 on KUNM.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, helping to bring more peace to those tangled in the web of the U.S. immigration system.
When we give the opportunity, when we give the support for a family to be able to make a new life, they can succeed. But it requires that there is an openness to extending that. It takes a risk to see that a person is a person.
That plus a worldwide call for peace leaders. Next time on Peace Talks Radio, Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Yasmin Khan. How does your library affect your community? Are you a patron of a rural library? Do you provide services at a library or use library space to work with others? What would you like to see grow at your library if it had more state funding? We're talking about rural libraries today and how they could benefit from a $50 million endowment making its way through the New Mexico legislature now. And we'd like to hear from you. Our number is 505-277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. You can also email us at letstalk@kunm.org or tweet using the hashtag letstalknewmexico. We're going to take a caller, Jean from Carrizozo. Hi, Jean. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm a board member and volunteer at the newly opened Carrizozo Community Library. We are completely, entirely volunteer. It's a small group that started in about 2013 in committee, and just step by step, there were no librarians, nobody with any real library science experience. We just had some patience and determination, and step by step, we have finally had our grand opening last month. So we have virtually really, to speak of as yet, no real budget or funding. Everything has been donated. We do get our building, a use of our building from the town, and also they pay our utilities. But other than that, everything has been donated. People have been very generous, and we keep a dry board with things that we need, everything from laminators to really nice computers to printers, and those things have just been given us. But we know as time goes on that to sustain this kind of program, we would love to have some funding. We have a roof that leaks. We have some carpet that needs to be undone. We need new books. We have all our books were donated. We have a lot of programs for kids. We have run this library as a bookstore for the past 2 years in lieu of being ready to open our lending library. And we used the books that did not meet the criteria for being scanned into our lending system. So we've slowly been just making it a library, initiating the children's programs. We have a book nook. We have Wi-Fi. All of these were in place before the lending library actually was in place. So we're just thrilled to be qualifying to perhaps receive funds from this proposed endowment. And it's greatly needed. These rural libraries, it is slow. Our library is becoming where it's happening in Carrizozo. And we're just seeing factions of people come together in the library that we have not seen together in a while. It's really heartening. And yes, we're all volunteers and we get tired, but it's a labor of love and some funding would be magnificent.
Great. Thank you, Genia. It sounds like these libraries start with a really dedicated base of volunteers, and then they definitely are going to need a little help. And then let's hear from Andreas from Española. Andreas, you're on the phone and on the line.
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, I want to really appreciate your program this morning. You know, that lady from that caller from Socorro, I believe, is the one that really explained a lot. You know, I'm a retired from education, and it's really astounding to hear that, you know, the situations and the way our little communities here are being implemented and just, I don't know how they're sustaining, because like myself, if I need to go to a library, I go to Española, but I live, there's a lot of buildings that are not being occupied, like the lady explained, if they're not owned, then they're renting, then they can't do any grant writing and receive any grant money, because that was going to be my other point, you know, in order to be able to apply to big companies like Ford and all them, that they're always willing and able to be able to contribute to something as important as a library. And by what I've been hearing, you know, the Dixon Library is getting utilized real good. And like here where I'm at, here between Alcalde, between Española and Velarde, we got that Oñate building that's just been sitting there. I don't know what it's being utilized now, but that for example, that would be an excellent library for the folks from not just here, but from you know, a little travel to be able to come and utilize buildings like that. And be able to get some of that money to actually like pay someone to kind of just master run it or whatever, and it's a big plus, you know. I hope I'm just astounded that it's never been addressed before on the need for these, you know. What I'm hearing is like I said, mind-boggling on something as important as this. It just makes you wonder where our money's really going. Keep up the good work, ladies and gentlemen out there that are really, doing this, because it's a plus for not just for the children, but for the whole communities.
Yeah. Thank you, Andres. Yeah, it sounds like it. And we have an email comment from Sarah. She says tribal libraries are amazing. She's from Zuni Pueblo, and she says tribal libraries support language learning, job training, after-school programs, and are often the only way that people can access the internet for jobs, veterans, benefits, and more. She says this endowment funding would help provide stability for tribal libraries. And we want to go to Cynthia in Santo Domingo Pueblo. Hi, Cynthia. You're on the air.
Good morning, everybody. I so appreciate the talk this morning. And I support the proposed endowment for tribal libraries. I'm one of 20 tribal libraries throughout New Mexico. We have a consortium called the NALSIC, Native American Library Special Interest Group, and Torreón is one of the members of this consortium. And I wanted to talk about our library, which is a three-wall library, where on the north side of the community center. I'm a full-time person, and we pride ourselves as being community-oriented, meaning that we, no matter what happens in the community, we're there to to provide information to assist community members should they need help with documents or online services, because a lot of people that come through the library may not have ever used a computer, and so they take computer classes here, and before you know it, for lessons after, they're independent. So success stories like that are maybe small. However, again, we are first responders at our libraries and very proud to be a server within the community.
Thank you, Cynthia. Yes, it sounds like a very important service. We have a couple more calls. We'll have to take them quickly because we're nearing the end of the show. We have Ruth from Placitas. Hi, Ruth. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm the chair of the board of the Placitas Library, and I just wanted to reiterate that our little library thrives on the love of our community. We have 90-some volunteers that help us keep the place going, and we have become a hub. We are a polling place for the community. We have children's programs, adult programs, art programs, et cetera. And so this is all provided for our community. And that funding would be a godsend. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth. We have one comment from online from Barbara in Chimayo. And Barbara wanted to remind people that tribal libraries are public libraries, and they are open to everyone. That's good to know. We also have Sheena from Rinconada. Sheena, hi, you're on there.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to quickly mention that this, like, I'm 70 years old. There's so many people my age that are, like, technically challenged and people who can't afford to retire and are still trying to work. And anyway, I've had so much help with my local library walking in and having help with issues like that. And talking to people my age, 70, I'm realizing how important these libraries are going to be in the future for people who are just going to try to survive in a society that's now gone. So, you know, the technology, which is expensive for people to have. Anyway,
this is 89.9 KUNM.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Sheena. And we have a few minutes left, but I just wanted to get one quick piece of advice. If Maria, what if somebody is interested in starting a library in their community, what would be the one biggest piece of advice that you would give to them?
Well, there has to be an overall plan, because many times these things are pieced together based on who can do what. But there needs to be a vision for a final library that's going to really serve the area. So you have to know what the area needs.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And Donna, what would be your one piece of advice for somebody out in a rural spot in New Mexico who would like to start a library?
Oh, boy, that's a mouthful.
A quick mouthful here.
Yeah, really. I think the biggest thing would be to reach out to the state library. They are unbelievably helpful. They do everything from guide you through the administrative process. They help all the way down to helping you select books. What computer systems would work best? What budget conscience systems would be best utilized in a community library? They are a godsend.
Great. Thank you. We have 1 minute left, and I just wanted to get Christine, what would be your grain of advice for people wanting to start a library?
I think it's really to reach out to the community and find out what the community's needs are. It was really interesting to hear from Shell the different services that libraries are providing. And I think if libraries are actually able to respond to those needs of the community, that's where they're going to find their support, both in volunteer hours and in fundraising.
Excellent. Thank you. And Shell, if people want to learn more about the Rural Library Initiative, where can they go for information?
Well, they can email me. My name, S-H-E-L-N-E-Y-M-A-R-K at windstream.net.
Very good. Thank you. That's all the time we have today. I want to thank our guests. The conversation does not have to end here. You can share your thoughts by commenting on KUNM.org or email letstalk@KUNM.org. If you miss part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Next week, we'll look at public charter schools and how they fit into the state's public education system. Lawmakers are considering several bills this session, including one to set a moratorium on new charters. That's on Let's Talk New Mexico Thursday mornings at 8. I'm Yasmin Khan. Our engineer is Mario Spencer. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls, and Hannah Colton live tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.